That's it.
Works for me. Okay, can everyone hear me? Yes, we know you're hard of hearing. That's okay. So let me give everyone due warning. I actually like to talk to the audience, and that means I expect the audience to talk back. Yes. Not only that, it means I'm going to do things like say, okay, everyone who agrees with this, put their hands up. Everyone who agrees with this, put their hands up. This is a hint. Okay, everyone who disagrees, you're allowed to fall asleep or go. Either way. That's not falling asleep, and that's not going. If you have ethical objections, that's fine. You can raise some other body part. So I know this is 2 p.m. on Friday, and you've had a long week or multiple days, or however the way it's gone. So as such, I'm presuming you're more interested in being entertained with a side note of education as opposed to educated with a side note of entertainment. This means I'm going to talk fairly quickly. If I talk too fast, you're really going to have to wave me down. I'm not about to slow down to, well, Texas speed, but I'll try to slow down to be intelligible at the very least. So what I'm talking about today is the security butterfly effect. If you aren't in here and wanting to listen to this, then perhaps you should find the room you want to be in. Everyone here for the right talk? Hands? Close enough. So, the butterfly effect is classically called this because there was this title of a really kind of neat paper called "Does the Flap of a Butterfly's Wings in Brazil Set Off a Tornado in Texas?" And this is actually all about weather, believe it or not. I've completely blanked on the guy's name because I'm horrible with that, but basically he was doing weather calculations in the 60s, put in his numbers manually the second time, and discovered he got a totally different effect. He'd had a rounding error. So instead of putting in five decimal places, he put in three. And this is what we end up as the absolute formal definition. Small variations in the initial condition of a system may produce large variations in the long-term behavior of the system. Now, the reason I'm going over all of this is because a lot of people think the butterfly effect has a lot more to do with time travel. Okay, well, I mean, who here thinks of butterfly effect and time travel? There, my point exactly. And while I'd like to be able to do time travel, I might actually get more sleep. Not going to happen. So, brief few things about what the butterfly effect is. It's subtle. We're talking about tiny changes in the initial conditions of a system. So we're not talking about, oh my God, we have a bridge here and we don't have a bridge there, or we have 5 million people in one place and none in the other. We're talking about maybe you got out of bed on the right side instead of the wrong side. Understand? Thank you. So what it isn't, it's not the domino effect here. We're not talking about there's one clearly identifiable thing that's caused everything to just fall down in front of it. It's not, oh yeah, Josh there decided that it would be perfect time to make changes at 4 p.m. on Friday. And lo and behold, we've had this problem all weekend. It's not that easy. It might be Josh got out of the bed on the wrong side of the bed a couple of years ago and... Did you? Okay. It's also, as I'm saying here, not linear or cascading per se. We're not talking about a scenario like Skype a few months ago where they had, they were down for 3 days. They had one failure. The failure they had didn't get handled so well, and then when everybody tried to connect further, they got overloaded and everything kept on failing from there. But again, there you got a really nice direct cause and effect. Who here got affected by that, by the way? Wow, almost nobody using Skype here. So, all this stuff about weather is very nice, but what are the slight initial variations in our systems? We're talking about, theoretically at least, computers here, programs here, a little bit about people, because people do factor into the equation. I presume everyone recognizes this? Yes? Hands? Thank you. So one bad assumption can be fatal. However, okay, I admit my slide says but I'm going to say however. It sounds more impressive. It's just not that simple. Do we know what the initial condition of our systems is in the first place? Who here knows what the initial condition of whatever their systems are is? Yes, you have to raise your hand or put your hand down, depending on whether you think you do or don't. So far, we have exactly one, and I think that would be Phil being a smartass. So does anybody actually know what the additional condition of our systems is? Do you think the designers know? Okay, I expect either you get hands up or you sort of shake your heads at me. That way I have some idea of what's going on. Okay, so do the people who wrote the specifications know? Okay, are there any specifications? Fair enough. So we get these increasing numbers of lines of code, increasingly complex systems. Modularization and specialization, actually. How many people here specialize in something? I'd say that's probably about half the audience. Interdependent systems. How many people here connect to systems that don't have anything to do with them? Out of curiosity, does anyone here have full control over their entire environment? Cool. What is it?
It's a very mixed environment. It's a small house.
Do you connect to the outside world?
Yes. So therefore, then.
Okay. There was somebody in the back there. Ah, okay, cool. And does that actually connect to the outside world?
No.
I had to ask. So what I'm going to be talking about here is assumptions. Speaking of assumptions, I made a really bad assumption when I went to search for this picture. I did leave safe search off. Now, Av, I might have expected that you'd be the one who thought I'd crop the picture. No, I did not crop the picture. It was other pictures I found. I'll leave you to finding those kind of pictures on your own. So, essentially, if we're going to look at what our systems are, I'm going to say that we'll start with a set of assumptions about what the systems are, some of which may be sane, some of which may be not so sane. Generalizing, we make environmental assumptions. Everyone knows it doesn't snow in the desert, right? Okay, I know you're from around here. That's different. Who here is familiar with snow and deserts? I think I give that about half. Not bad. We make assumptions about how people behave and how systems behave. Is that not a beautiful pair of shoes? Okay, who here would wear those to work? I should point out that the row of people from Google are the ones who raised their hands first. I said first. And we've all got these interesting blind spots. I mean, there are things that are so hardwired into us that we just know it works that way. We know gravity goes down. At least I know gravity goes down. Josh isn't quite so sure. Anybody else here think gravity goes somewhere else?
Down relative to what?
The mystery spot can be easily explained by conventional physics. The proof is simple. It is left to the commenter. You know, the first response that comes to mind for intelligent falling is not actually helpful. and I won't share it with the audience. Ask me later. So what I'm going to do is tell you a bunch of different stories, and I'm going to expect people to tell me which one of these three theoretical assumptions I'm talking about is the basis for where this whole thing started. We're going to get to the wonderful tornado at the end of it, which is the, oh my God, what the fuck. But where did that start from? I have to add a disclaimer, of course. Names have been changed, places have been changed, except for those things which are, in fact, publicly available and publicly known. If I tell you something that's not entirely correct, I apologize. I have been accurate to the extent to which I'm aware of accuracy. Now, this one's a very, very famous incident. Therak 25, well-studied. Who here has not heard of this? You know, I'm really worried that the people at Google haven't heard of this.
I'm sure we don't have any of your code, so.
Oh, come on. Google has something of everything, so you must have some of the code.
No, we have references that we don't actually have.
You mean the recruiters were wrong? Fair enough. So, we have a pretty basic cast of characters here. ACL, Atomic Energy of Canada Limited. These days they make nuclear reactors. This shouldn't worry you. CGR, a French company. They don't come into it much, but we do need to mention them. ACL of computer engineers and programmers. The Therak 25, which is a medical linear accelerator. Just to be clear from the other types of accelerator. There are 25 machine operators, medical physicists, an assortment of medical patients. Since when, I'm not sure what term I should properly use for a collection of medical patients. Suggestions? Sorry?
Victim.
A victim of medical patients? And a bit of background information. So ACL and CGR made medical accelerators together. Now, they call their accelerators the Therak 6, the Therak 20. CGR made the software, ACL made the hardware. Not 100% true, but true enough for our purposes here. It's a reasonable approximation. ACL and CGR, of course, had a falling out. I couldn't possibly imagine the corporations could disagree over simple things like building complex devices to bombard people with radiation. So ACL developed this great new linear accelerator called the Therak 25. They knew, of course, that the Therak 25 was better than the Therak 6 and the Therak 20, because they made it themselves. It was not only smaller, but it was more powerful. Well, this is one of the very few industries where we can say to ourselves, look, it's smaller and it's better. So the Therak 25 was revolutionary. It used all new advanced software. Actually reused software from the Therak 20 and the Therak 6, but who's counting here? It's all new. So Therak 20, Therak 6 use both hardware and software controls, but the Therak 25 was new and revolutionary and advanced, and it only used software controls. So the ACL engineers and programmers had to write special software to control the Therak 25, because it was, of course, all new and advanced and controlled by software. Now, we've got a few problems here, and I'm just going to go wandering through them at dubious speed. So an assortment of medical patients were experiencing bad effects after treatment with the Therak 25.
No.
Well, exactly. Now, I should explain that they're being treated for cancer, so theoretically they're having bad effects to begin with, but they were having worse effects. ACL explained, of course, this could not be a problem with the Therak 25. These are radiation. These are patients with cancer, after all. So perhaps they're just having bad effects. What do you think? Not all of them. Some of them. An assortment of them. Sorry? For some value, statistically significant.
What value was that?
I'd have to look it up for you. So, the Therak 25 often did unexpected things. Sometimes it underdosed patients. Not such a big deal. Not really helpful, but not such a big deal. Sometimes it overdosed them. This is a little bit more of a technical detail. Sometimes it produced strange errors. Good, bad. I'm relying on Mark here to produce the sound effects. Sometimes it just didn't want to work. In 1960? Sorry, you're right. 1985. 1960 is where the original stuff started.
Yeah.
My bad. Yep. See, Google knows about it, at least in theory. They don't know they know about it, but they know about it.
We had a reference to it, that's all.
This is correct, but no, it was not based on Windows. Now, was somebody back there stretching or actually commenting? Now, if I'm not mistaken, that's another one of those Google people, and you need to come up here and sit here. Yes, distributed right here. I would not want you to do something that would be dangerous to me. And frankly, I bathed today, I'm not radioactive. So ACL explained, of course, this could not be happening. Who believes this?
I really said that.
Oddly enough, the medical physicists and Therac 45 operators were not convinced. Some medical patients died. Well, exactly. I mean, it could have just been that they had cancer, and we all know that cancer is sometimes terminal. So, sorry, somebody back there made a smart out comment I couldn't catch. We'll get to that in a different story, actually. Life is eventually terminal. Some medical patients, as we said, experienced radiation overdoses, the nasty kind, you know, the ones that leave burning marks and patterns of things on you. Well, you understand, of course, that this was not actually a problem with the Therac 25.
What was,
technical details, exactly. ACL, of course, didn't want to hear about Therac 25 problems, because as we all know, there were no problems. ACL was in disgrace. Sorry? Yeah, but it's about different things most of the time. So finally, ACL decided, wait a minute, maybe there's an issue with our software. We can try adding hardware controls. Now, I'm glossing over things pretty dramatically here, but the functional summary is their software sucked. Their design process sucked, their testing sucked, and one difference between the Therac 6 and the Therac 20, and the Therac 25, of course, is, as we got to back at the beginning, okay, who remembers? Actually, I'm going to pick on whoever you are in front of me. You. Ah, okay, it's you, Mike. Speak up, did everyone hear him? Okay, so the originals had hardware controls and software controls. Rick wants to say something. The 25 was at least 2 times more powerful because they'd come up with a really cool new way to do radiation stuff. Smaller device, more power. Sorry? Do I look like I work in the nuclear industry? Sorry? I'm just going to ignore that. So, let's talk about some assumptions here. Somebody tell me where we started going wrong. Now, remember, we're talking here about assumptions about the environment, assumption about behavior, and blind spots. And the reason I'm limiting it down is because that makes it three things that you can try to remember, as opposed to a whole bunch of things to just sort of speculate on. That a hardware company could write software. So which one of the three would it fall under? Okay, anyone else? Very true, and that is environmental, behavioral, or blind spot. So we have a blind spot, we have an environmental, we have a blind spot. Do I have a third person? There were theoretical limits, but operator error could certainly cause unexpected things to happen. So which one of the three is it? Okay, so now we have a full trifecta. Anyone want to vote on which one they think is the most influential between the three of them? Whether it's assumptions about the environment in the case of the information they get being actually accurate, people doing something screwed up, or thinking a hardware company can actually write software.
All of the above.
Everyone agree with Mark? Hands, come on. Thank you. Remember, I've got this big bright light staring at me. I can't see a bloody thing unless you make large gestures. Okay, come on, everybody wave in that case. Thank you very much. So, moving on to a completely different thing. Anyone here heard of the Sammy worm? Hands, remember? Okay, so I see exactly three hands. Who here uses MySpace? Who here has a MySpace account? Okay, I see that's a slightly larger number of people. So going back again, we're using a fairly structured format here. We have our cast of characters. We have MySpace. It's a social networking site. I presume people have heard of it. Hands, come on. I know it's after lunch, but still. So we've got this guy named Sammy Kamkar, and he just wants to get laid. He's theoretically in a stable relationship with his girlfriend, but still, whatever. Bit of background information. Sammy wanted to look at the hot chicks on MySpace. I mean, that's basically the way to put it. Now, if you really wanted to look at the hot chicks' pictures, from what I gather on MySpace, because I do not have a MySpace account, you have to be somebody's friend. Av, is that true? So we know what he doesn't use MySpace for, at least in theory. So if you want to see the naughty bits. Okay. So the Pharaoh sex, oddly enough, was not fascinated by Sammy. He wanted to fascinate them, because how else is he going to see the pictures? And the way to fascinate them, you gotta be popular. Isn't that right? You gotta be popular to get chicks?
No.
Okay. It's possible that your keen sense of observation has led you to see that other people get chicks.
I don't know, I've never started.
You're married. Now, I will say that I'm using chicks in kind of a gender-ambiguous format here. It could just as easily be guys. But frankly, in terms of who goes to look for what online, it's usually guys looking for chicks as opposed to the other way around. Anyone here differ with that?
I've never been a chick stalker, so.
I was about to make a chicken joke, and I'm going to stop right here. So popular people, according to the MySpace definition, are people that have lots of friends. This is a little circuitous, but bear with me. Sammy, of course, so that he could see these pictures, wanted to be popular. So we run into the problem here. Sammy didn't have a lot of friends on MySpace. Friends being a relative term, because of course, friends online or friends that you friended according to whatever your social networking thing is maybe not quite the same as the people you'd call up and say, hey, I have a piano to move up the stairs. Can you give me a hand? Sammy decided that the best way to deal with this problem was to get more friends. Make sense to everyone? Hands, come on. Okay. So, to be popular on MySpace, he needed a lot of friends. So he took advantage of his friends. Good, bad, indifferent. Okay, people are okay with taking advantage of their friends. They're indifferent. So, well, okay, fair enough. Friends in MySpace aren't really friends. So Sammy made his friends make their friends his friends. His popularity grew exponentially. He put a little snippet of code on his MySpace page that caused anyone who looked at his MySpace page, or a certain proportion of them at any rate, to acquire this code that put him into their MySpace friend thing, and then continue to propagate itself. Now, if you have your friend who then says, I'll take my single friend and say to three friends who say to three friends each, you've got this little growth problem. Anyone done this to themselves where they suddenly discover it's not a linear, straightforward thing, it just sort of goes foosh? Hands? Ah, yes. MySpace was not amused. In fact, if I remember correctly, MySpace was not entirely online either. But these are technical details. The very specific detail is that MySpace was actually, believe it or not, not entirely the problem. They're pretty good at escaping JavaScript, Java, all these sorts of things. But pretty good, and I trust that anyone who connects to our pages is not going to accidentally download something or execute it. Not quite the same thing. So what were our assumptions here anyways? Okay, which one of our three is that? Okay. Anybody else? Whoever's back there? And that is which one?
It's definitely MySpot.
Anyone else? What a silent lot. Okay, so we're agreed. MySpace has blind spots. Everyone in agreement? Do you have a question or a comment?
I just agree.
Okay, everybody agree? Kind of a tepid agreement, but I'll live with it. So, we're going to talk about how to fit an elephant into a teacup. Once again, we have a cast of characters. We've got a secure data center, because data centers are always secure, right? We have world-class access controls.
That's not
safe. Hey, they say that they're world-class. They must be world-class. At least they're used around the world.
That's not
safe. Details. And they have talented staff. Yes. For those people who recognize who this is, it is merely a representation. It's not actually the person involved. I did say names have been changed. He did say I could use his picture. He did not, however, ask what I was going to use it for.
That's a behavioral problem.
And we all know he has behavioral problems. I'll wait. Are you done? Yep. The problem The secure data center was experiencing impressive growth. You have to be louder with that one.
Sorry.
There was a sound effect. I'm sorry if you couldn't hear it, but it was funny. The talented staff were constantly visiting the secure data center at peculiar hours. You know, noon, 1 p.m. Now, the world-class access controls will only admit one person at a time. They're very smart that way. They've got this wonderful setup where one person goes in, it detects that you're one person, and lets you through. Now, the world-class access controls knew that the talented staff member was more than one person, because the talented staff member was not a small gentleman. In fact, the talented staff member was a rather robust, husky gentleman of classic proportions, historical proportions.
Grandiose,
that works. The talented staff member was absolutely beside himself with consternation. Now, before I actually go into assumptions, I'm going to go on to say what they actually did to deal with the problem. What they did to deal with the problem was really straightforward. I mean, we all know that physical security people are highly reliable, well-paid, and really, really happy with their jobs, right? Everyone in agreement? Well, tepid agreement again. So rather than having to get up every time, go around the corner, let this guy through the door that actually thought he was one person instead of two, namely the nearby fire exit, they just propped it open.
No.
Because, you know, it was a whole lot easier to prop the door open than have to deal with the fact that he was two people and couldn't go through the access controls. Minor technical details. So what are our assumptions? So actually, what I'm going to ask is, where did we start to go wrong with all of this? Well, okay. But this is from someone at Google who builds data centers everywhere.
We can neither confirm nor deny the locations of our data centers.
You are not turned on. I agree. It would be better if we had robots. Then we could build them to be the right weight.
No. I mean, we already have the million monkeys problem. We don't need to have a million of them in the data center and finding out what happens.
Anybody here over 200 pounds?
Unfortunately.
Anybody here over 200 pounds?
And let me tell you, it came as quite a shock.
Anybody here over 300 pounds? Anyone here over 4? Anyone here under 100 pounds?
So the magic number for this particular setup was 400 pounds. Because clearly, you might have one person who made it almost all the way up to 400 pounds, but two people were sure to be at least 400 pounds. You'll notice there's one other assumption there. How much do you weigh, Av? Okay, and I weigh about 130. So how many of us can we fit in there? Three on a good day? Sorry? There, see, all three of us could go through and we're one person. Really weird one person. No, it doesn't. I said it.
You didn't have to, though.
So we have an initial assumption, which is that everyone's the same. Is this environmental, behavioral, or just a blind spot? That's not one of the categories. Okay. Anyone disagree?
What?
So assuming a spherical staff
staff member of Universal Size, yes, we're all the same.
I don't want to think about a frictionless staff member, thank you.
Anybody have other thoughts on this one?
I believe they had an assumption that they would try going through it once. Small people will not.
Well, that's a little technical detail, isn't it? We all know that people will always do the thing they're supposed to do, right?
Uh-huh.
Which, of course, it is. I mean, we all know we all weigh the same. So clearly, it's a reasonable approximation to say that since we all weigh the same, we must all be, you know, easy to tell from weight going through a door. Now, you notice no one's mentioned the other assumption, which is the physical security people you have will, of course, notice that there are two people or not actually open the door for somebody that is supposed to go through the access controls. And that would be which type of assumption? Sorry? Okay, so in other words, they behave badly.
We have a scandal in Bohemia. I grant it's not actually Bohemia, but it makes a much better title than a scandal in Sweden. Our cast of characters, a bunch of paranoid privacy enthusiasts, you'll notice there's no picture associated. A security researcher named Dan, how the hell do I pronounce that?
Very carefully.
Egerstedt, okay.
Gesundheit.
Thank you. A piece of privacy-enhancing software called Tor. Who here has heard of Tor? Okay, now that's just flaming cool. Thank you. The last time I asked this question to a room full of people, there were not nearly so many hands. Bit of a background story. Tor is privacy-enhancing software, which is written by paranoid privacy enthusiasts.
It say shouldn't that be 10 times surprising. Fast.
No. You almost had me try, but no.
Functionally, Tor makes it hard for other people to find where you are on the internet.
It also makes it hard for other people to block your traffic to the internet. I suspect people can tell me what at least some of the traffic on there is.
Porn.
Okay, it's porn from China. All good. I do, and let me tell you, it's an education. I don't know if my mother would approve, but it's still an education. So, you need to read the fine print with this stuff. Because, you know, it's kind of hard being either private or anonymous. It's not quite so hard being paranoid.
None of your business, damn it.
So here's the fine print. So first, Tor does not protect you if you do not use it correctly. Read our list of warnings and make sure to follow the instructions for your platform carefully. Second, even if you configure and use Tor correctly, there are still potential attacks that could compromise Tor's ability to protect you. Third, no anonymity system is perfect these days, and Tor is no exception. You should not rely solely on the current Tor network if you really need strong anonymity.
In other words, it doesn't do shit.
No, it does. You just don't want to be stupid.
Assumption.
What? Are you going to try to tell me that there's people that don't use their common sense and don't pay attention?
Yes. Where have you been?
Your government.
A
problem. Yes, a problem. So Dan Egerstedt posted details of sensitive email accounts. Responsibly, of course, since this would always be a responsible thing. Paranoid privacy enthusiasts were, unsurprisingly, disturbed. Where had Dan found the sensitive account details? Had he broken into critical systems? Thoughts, anybody? Yes? No?
No.
Okay. Was there a dangerous vulnerability out there in the wild?
No.
That definitely gets points because it's true. No. It appears that Dan Eggerstead had actually read the fine print. I suppose I should have actually made the fine print smaller if I expected people here to not read it. So Dan knew that traffic was only encrypted inside Tor. Dan admitted that he had been examining Tor exit traffic. I've been trying very hard to find a neutral term for what he'd been doing with the exit traffic, and I'm not sure if examining counts or not. But since I started with sniffing and moved onwards, I suppose examining is slightly more neutral language.
Pilfering.
Dan claimed he was performing a public service. Who agrees?
Let me shoot you as a public service.
It's all in fun, even if I lose an eye, yes. The paranoid privacy enthusiasts were not amused. Apparently the police were not amused either. He got raided yesterday or the day before. Just as I was checking to see what was in the news before I actually finished putting my slides together. Apparently the police think that perhaps he did something more than just looking at traffic. But we're not really talking about Dan here, apart from the fact that the police were not amused. What we're talking about is, lo and behold, there were a whole bunch of people who got their information taken as it was coming out of they seem to have made a little assumption here, and I'm wondering if someone here can tell me which assumption they made.
Tor is not end-to-end.
Tor is not end-to-end. Tor is passing through the tunnel on your way from point A to point B. And okay, yeah, it can help you hide where you're coming from or what you're looking at, but it's not complete end-to-end encryption. So, if it's not complete end-to-end encryption, what sort of stuff should we not send across this connection?
Porn!
Well, that depends on what you're looking at. I mean, we know that Av's looking at stuff nobody wants to look at. No. Thank you.
Especially if it's porn.
I'm sorry, but most people don't look at porn in ASCII anymore.
I am so not commenting on that.
You two can just get together afterwards and discuss. I declined to comment. Okay, so I'm guessing that not everyone could hear you, since I could barely hear you. But what he was just saying is that Tor is only designed to foil traffic analysis. It's not designed to, and I missed the last little bit, although I can guess at it. Stop content analysis. Or in other words, yeah, okay, we can't figure out where you came from, but we sure as hell know what you're looking at. There's also another assumption built in here about fine print. That people will read it. Who here reads the manual first? As in, reads the manual, then does it, as opposed to tries it out and then says, oh hell, it's not working. Let me try reading the manual to find out. I think we're looking at about 20%. Sometimes you do. Comment, Rick? Okay. So we have an assumption that people who are using something that they rely on to protect themselves will reliably use and read the fine print. So which kind of assumption do we have again? See, I keep on forgetting to swap slides at the end. But I presume you'll forgive me. You've seen this slide a few times before already. details. It's not quite as spectacular as it looks, but I couldn't resist the title. So our cast of characters is actually very simple. It's demanding users and helpful engineers. I'm a helpful engineer. I'd be very happy to help you. Just write it up, print it out, and I'll talk to you later. So the problem is actually very straightforward. I/O is slow. Anyone disagree? Users couldn't access their data, since of course we all keep data as opposed to anything else on our files.
Porn.
I'm trying to imitate Dan, I'm sorry. Not the Dan I was talking about, the other Dan. The other Dan. So, the question was, we have things like USB and FireWire that are kind of slow as they stand. So, there's ways to make it go faster. You can make I/O faster pretty reliably by caching, in fact. The Google guys are the ones I should talk to about that, aren't they?
I have no recollection of that, Senator.
Give the man a cigar. You know, everything comes back to porn sooner or later. It seems to be motivating. Yes, and if you want to do that in chorus, you can outside after. So they came up with this really cool idea about how to make this stuff go faster. Instead of having to go through the CPU for everything, they just use direct memory access. That would be really great. Well, I mean, you're cutting out the middleman. Things go much, much faster. It's better, right? You're all staring at me like I'm turning into something peculiar. Gesture, please. Yes, no, maybe. Okay, so that was yes and no and maybe. We'll just smile then. So, you use direct memory access. It goes much, much faster. But, of course, there's always a detail. There's other things in the memory. And normally, you have this nice man, I was about to say man in the middle, don't I mean broker, to say, hey, you know, maybe you can't access that portion, or maybe it's a bad idea, or what have you. But it turns out that if you have something, have hardware that's designed to just go really fast and to pull things out of the memory and put them back into the memory, you don't need that broker, of course, because this is good, right? Absolutely. So it turns out that not only can you make your I/O go fast, you can get other bits of I/O, things that are perhaps sensitive pieces of data. It's actually a great boon for forensics, isn't it? So in terms of the assumptions that we've got going on here, we've got, of course, our helpful engineers who knew that it would just make stuff go faster for everyone, it would be good, right? So what sort of a bad assumption do we start with here? I'm sure that somebody in that far back corner over there who's been completely ignoring me can come up with an answer. You only have one user on the system? Sorry? You only have one thing doing stuff at a time on a system, and that everything on the system is something the user can see, or should be able to see. Is that a reasonable summary? So are these our environmental, behavioral, or blind spot assumptions? There's someone there about to say something. That nobody was going to do something bad. Everyone think that's a good assumption?
Of course.
Do pass me your computer. No one ever does when I say that, but sooner or later someone will and I'll be in trouble. Sorry? So that assumption about who can access what, and that it's safe to do, it's safe to assume that anything that's connected is okay. And we think this is a blind spot. Is there anything bad about the environment here? Any hardware engineers in the audience? Okay, we can go with that. So there's no place like home. Everyone agree? Okay, we have kind of indifferent agreements here, so I'll not ask people about their home lives. That strikes me as being dangerous. Cast of characters, of course. We have an unnamed company. I couldn't think up a smart name for the company, so they can just be the unnamed company. A virtual private network. Who here has virtual private networks? IT. Because, of course, sorry? IT as opposed to it. I tried to find a picture of Cousin It and I failed. But that's probably my failure in searching for something a little too common on Google. A teleworker. Actually, out of pure curiosity, how many people here do in fact telework or are able to? It's a hell of a change from what it used to be. That's about half the room. And of course, the vendor. Because there's always a vendor involved.
And it's always their fault.
Well. Sorry? Yes, unless you're the vendor, in which case it's clearly a customer problem.
No one ever got fired for choosing IBM.
Or Sun, or Microsoft, or... And we have a pretty straightforward problem. The teleworker could not connect to the virtual private network. Anyone had that problem before?
Me!
Apparently, yes. Some enthusiastically. The error message was not helpful. Anyone had that problem? IT confirmed that all of the settings were correct, of course. Well, the settings are always correct and nobody's ever changed anything. The vendor confirmed, of course, that the platform was supported, which is the unusual part here because the vendor almost never confirmed the platform was supported. Everybody was, in fact, puzzled. It should have worked. Why it didn't work, not so sure. Further investigation revealed that a file could not be renamed. This is, of course, an obvious problem when your VPN doesn't work. Obvious? You know, obvious? So, as it turns out, the reason the file couldn't be renamed is because you can't do hard links across file systems. Now, I'm going to ask one of these questions that kind of boils down to religion for systems. How many people use one large partition for everything? OS, data, whatever. I see one hand, two hands.
All right, we have too many consultants in the room.
In this particular case, I mean, would consider doing so to be a normal, common, and regular thing. So, how many people here would think that nobody would ever do something else? Now, that's an awfully silent bunch of people. So, you were still being silent. You were just jumping up and down about it. I'll rephrase that. How many people here would think that the only way that people would configure systems is everything in one large partition? And that's an absolute nobody. So, being absolutely sensible, the vendor decided that it was a good idea to use /temp for their temporary files. Makes sense to everyone, right? it's temporary, it's a good place to put temporary files. Except under certain operating systems, temp is usually its own file system as opposed to part of the root file system, so hard links don't work. Fine, whatever. But when you get an but the error message as a result of this was not can't create file, it was can't create VPN. But the basic assumption, however, is a problem with the environment. Anyone else? Everyone's just like you? Cool, do I have a beard? And that would be which type? Is that a blind spot or is that a behavior?
It's a behavior.
Okay, so we have mutters in both directions. Who thinks it's a blind spot? Who thinks it's a behavior? I think we'll just call it a blind spot and a behavior. Well, actually, it might have worked for you, but it didn't work for me. Well, the config was right.
And the platform was supported.
Absolutely. I wasn't going to make the bad TV reference. I did think about it. Cast of characters. We have a shiny new data center. They only stay shiny while they're new. An important customer, of course. All customers are important. Yes, customers are important. I see how we feel about our customers. We have a band of electricians. It was shocking, absolutely. A bored security guard. An attention of NOC staff. Well, it's better than an inattention of NOC staff. The fire suppression system.
No! This will end in fire.
Fire, tears, sometimes things end well, sometimes they don't end so well. I don't think Halon is either fire or tears. So just a little bit of history here. The band of electricians were installing power in a shiny new data center for the important customer. The data center was, of course, secure. Different data center. Of course. Everyone knows they must have world-class access controls. The band of electricians, since they weren't actually trustworthy, would have to be watched at all times. You never know what they might do with their, well, gear. So a bored security guard watched the band of electricians. Suddenly, there was an alarming noise. Cool, everyone was quiet.
We're in suspense.
The fire suppression system had become perturbed.
No!
Halon or CO2?
I declined to comment. So the attention of NOC staff knew that there was a band of electricians in the shiny new data center. And the attention of NOC staff could not see fire or smoke on their monitors. This, of course, being a good way to check, right? Hands, come on. Sometimes the fire alarm system just didn't like electricians. Well, you know, it would get perturbed about them. So the attention of NOC staff wanted to investigate further, since if the system just didn't like the electricians, and they didn't see smoke or fire on their monitors, it might not be a problem. Unfortunately, the fire suppression system override didn't work. Anyone familiar with these?
Yeah.
I think I'm vaguely disturbed that there's about 5% of the people in the room that know what the override for the fire suppression system is.
We don't have any.
A fire suppression system or an override?
An override. It does not exist.
What are you using for fire suppression? So the basic summary with an override is that as long as you're holding on to it, the fire suppression system shouldn't actually go off.
Dead man switch.
Diverging briefly, one data center I was involved in had a little technical detail with the electricians and the fire suppression system, a different set of them this time, that resulted in having to have somebody in the NOC hold down the button all day. They're actually specially designed. If you look at that, you'll notice the switch is recessed, specifically so you can't tape it down. But that was that's neither here nor there and is tangential to this particular story. The fire suppression system was incompatible with breathing.
Dang.
Actually, they're all incompatible with breathing to a greater and lesser extent. And I mean, even water is going to kill you with them. What is it, an inch of water can kill you? Half a centimeter? People do the darndest things in data centers. There was a solution to that one. Run. So the problem is that there actually wasn't a fire, as it turns out. I know, we started out with it should end in fire, but in this particular case, we had a perturbed system, but we didn't have a fire. We get to that later. Nobody knew why the fire suppression system had become perturbed. This in itself was perturbing. No one knew why the fire suppression system override had failed. Also perturbing, because, well, you kind of like to not spend that much money on a routine basis. It's very expensive to charge fire suppression systems. The band of electricians argued with the attention of NOC staff. The attention of NOC staff argued with the important customer. Well, it's clearly somebody's fault. It's just a question of whose. The important customer argued with the band of electricians. It has to come full circle. This, on the other hand, is absolutely true. Everybody was unhappy. But finally, some information emerged. There you go. The fire alarm had been manually activated. Now, as it turns out, you'll notice I didn't mention one of the cast of characters in that little round of everyone blaming everybody else. The bored security guard. Oh no, it's not even that interesting. So the security guard is supposed to stand and watch the electricians all day. Wouldn't you like to do that?
No.
Sound effects, come on, guys. How much does
it
pay? Not nearly as much as you're making now. Well, okay, maybe not you. I forgot he had a state change. Exactly. I'm not claiming I'm immune to the assumptions at all. So the security guard, being bored and not really liking to stand there and not getting paid well for standing there, went and got a chair. Wasn't exactly okay, but on the other hand, it was a busy data center, it was spanking new, and why not? So the security guard got a chair and then got comfortable. Very comfortable. Leaned back, caught the edge of the chair on the fire alarm, and pulled the fire alarm. Technical details.
At least it wasn't a backbone.
Backhoes are actually slightly easier to find. So somebody give me an assumption that's in here. That nobody would decide it was going to be fun to trigger the fire alarm manually. No kidding. And that would be blind spot, behavior, environment.
Behavior, I think that they would only trigger the alarm when there was a
Exactly. And the interesting thing about that is also, it turns out the reason that the suppression system override button failed is because it was a manual trigger. Because nobody would ever pull the fire alarm manually unless there was really a fire.
I did it in first grade. I can't do that.
Oh no, I believe you. There's a reason why I went and found that particular image as opposed to the more classic one with a bubble around it. There were some immediate and visible changes by the next day around all of the fire alarms in the data center. That was a different question. But yes, there was also a new set of, actually a new security company, not just a new security guard. Absolutely, there's the assumption that the manual system wouldn't have failures. But of course, it wouldn't have failures because you'd have to do it manually, right?
There's the assumption that because the electricians were in there, they must have caused the alarm to go off.
Exactly. Somebody was doing work in there. Clearly, that must be the problem. Of course, they know how the alarm's triggered. The alarm goes off. That, how, it's a just a pesky little detail. Convoluted assumptions, of course. Test, but verify. I don't know if anyone recognizes this picture. All right, someone tell me what it is. Cold fusion. Cast of characters, a software company.
Oh.
You'll notice that I'm very, very inventive with my names here. It skips having to do a trademark search. The development team. A web-based application. The QA department. Users, there's always users. Well, okay, there aren't always users, but for the purposes of this particular talk, there's often users.
There are always users.
Okay. He says so.
I do.
Software company makes a web-based application. Fairly obvious given the cast of characters, but, you know, whatever. Someone told the software company that HTTP is not secure.
Gasp. Shock. Amazement.
It was a shock to them. The software company, of course, was shocked and dismayed.
Ha, I knew it.
The software company told the development team to make things secure. Well, this is the best way to fix things, of course. Make it so. So the development team implemented HTTPS because, well, this is the easiest way to secure a web application, correct? See, HTTPS is secure, I said so. Absolutely. So the QA team tested the web-based application because that's what QA teams do. The web-based application passed to the tests. Seem reasonable to everyone?
I don't want to say yes because I know I'm going to be wrong.
So we have a problem. Well, okay, the users were puzzled is maybe not a problem, but it's kind of a statement.
Condition.
A generic condition.
It's a native state of being.
So the software company said that the web-based application was, in fact, secure. But the users couldn't connect securely. This, of course, is clearly not the software company's problem. The users complained to the software company. I grant that this is also a common state. This also, of course, is a common state. The software company then complained to the developers. The developers combed through the code. Everyone knew that HTTPS had been implemented. And the developers said, hey, it works for us. Sorry? It works for them, clearly it must be okay. QA displayed the test results. See? Passed the tests. And everyone knew, of course, that the web-based application had passed QA. QA complained about the users. Well, clearly they'd done something wrong, because everyone knew that HTTPS had been implemented and it had passed all the tests. Developers complaining about users is also quite common. Nobody knew why the users were puzzled, because it passed the tests, it had been written in, so clearly it should work that way. Then a developer examined the test suite. Somebody was in disgrace.
Also, I hasten to add, a normal state of being.
Well, yes. The tests, lo and behold, were not actually testing what should have been tested. Is anyone surprised?
Shocked and dismayed.
Remind me that you're not a developer. It appears that cut and paste had been abused. Because, of course, the correct way to write the test is to copy and paste. And lo and behold, the tests were testing. The tests were passing, it's just they weren't actually testing HTTPS. So what are our assumptions? They were running the right tests, so.
They were running all the tests they should. The tests were correctly written down.
So they didn't actually constrain the test to test what they thought they were testing. Somebody in the back?
The assumption is most of us that the user is going to type in all the options that I read.
So in this case, would it have worked if the user typed in what they were supposed to test it, type in? I'm not entirely sure that I followed all of that, but I believe what you were saying boils down to, we assume that the user did the right thing.
I think I have a tangential assumption. Tangential to where you're going, but this is important. The assumption that HTTPS would actually make the web application secure.
That too. So who here has heard that one before? It's got HTTPS, so it's secure. Firewalls make us secure. It's so secure I can't connect to anything. So just a little bit of monkey business before we wrap up. We've got a perfectly normal cast of characters, some intrepid university researchers.
Uh-oh.
Doughty system administrators.
Doughty, good word.
A fax.
Will this character come out and take a bow at the end?
If it does, I want to know what you're smoking. A digital field service engineer. I don't want to know if the gentleman serviced in that respect. Monkeys. Because everything is improved with monkeys. I told you we'd get to monkeys eventually. So we've got a problem. The vax crashed.
Don't!
Yes, even vaxes, no matter what people tell you now, do in fact sometimes crash. So the system administrators called a digital field service engineer to fix the vax. Not unreasonable. The system administrators, of course, did not call the university researchers, for which I can't entirely blame them. I mean, who wants a bunch of users hovering around getting upset at you? After all, there was nothing unusual about the vax. So the digital field service engineer ran diagnostics on the vax. Everyone think this is reasonable? Hands, come on. I know we're getting towards the end of this, but a little more energy. There were unexpected consequences. It seems that the vax had monkeys, not hard drives.
What?
Does this seem normal to everybody?
No.
No, I drink, I don't smoke. Lo and behold, monkeys crash when you run diagnostics on them. Some monkeys can be recovered. Some monkeys experience fatal errors. So, for all that I'm telling this in a particularly pithy way, they were doing behavioral experiments on monkeys and had them hooked up with electrode nets via the hard drive controller on the vax.
Oh.
It handles I.O., it makes sense. And the way that they'd selected to make sure that nobody did the wrong thing, namely, write to the monkeys, was to set the button for read-only and put a sign on it saying, do not move from read-only. This, of course, being a clear way to indicate to everybody that there are monkeys attached to the vax. I don't think I quite broke Mark, but I think I got close to breaking Mark.
No, just entertain.
So as you can see, we have a couple of bad assumptions here. Although I'm willing to grant that the digital field service engineer did have hysterics and wanted to call the Humane Society and was really not coping. Because, as we said, some of the monkeys had fatal errors.
Yeah.
So, anyone want to give me some assumptions we had here?
Monkeys make good hard drives.
They make great hard drives as long as it's read only.
Apparently, that university researchers are in any way sane.
Everyone here know what their systems are being used for? Hands? That's a little less than half.
Well, know what they're being used for, or know everything they're being used for?
Know everything they're being used for. Although in this case, it was know what they're being used for. It was a dedicated system. the infamous phrase, of course, is always mount a scratch monkey. Are you going to send that link to Av? So do we think this is environmental, a blind spot, or behavioral? No, there was no monkey fucking going on.
Big time behavioral.
So spending a few minutes to just wrap up briefly, I said I'd actually talk about future directions when I wrote up the description for this talk. And it's a good thing I read the description or I wouldn't have remembered. So what we're looking at these days is there's an increase in specialized knowledge, narrowing specialization. People know very specific things, but they don't know everything. I've had the argument with a few people here about whether or not you even need to know how to program to do systems administration anymore. Who here thinks that you actually have to be able to, in this case, it's Unix programming, so be able to program in C to do system administration now? So I'd say that we have maybe 5% of the room that thinks you actually need to have the ability to program in C to do system administration anymore.
You don't need it. It helps. You don't need it.
Got the rise of the machines. It's easier and easier to outsource what you know and what you want to check, what you want to test, to let the machine figure it out, to check your search engine and have it tell you what the answer is, and just presume that it's going to be right. Presume your IDS tells you the right thing. Because, of course, we all know that no one ever gets false positives off an IDS or off of virus scanners. You have a comment?
Well, we all know that this can never go bad.
They don't. It's an environmental problem when they go bad. But what we're looking at is more and more trusting that whatever assumptions somebody else has made for us are correct or are built in the right way. And a lot of the time, as we've demonstrated fairly amply through this, we don't even know about the assumptions that we've made unconsciously. Someone here caught me in one earlier, but we all have our blind spots, our things that we know are absolutely true about the environment. I mean, we all know there's no monkeys attached to the vax. Because nobody would ever do something like that. Oh, nobody ever does something on the machine and doesn't tell the sysadmins. That never, ever, ever happens.
Well, you can at least prevent them from hooking monkeys up to it if you don't give them physical access.
Hey, the monkeys weren't visibly hooked up to the vax.
Wireless monkeys.
I did not think of that.
Questions? Comments? I believe that you have to talk to the ethics department and review board about that. Specify the particulars of your experiment and then detail how exactly you intend to take care of them and what you're going to learn from the process. You can't run diagnostics on the disk without being able to write to it as well as read to it.
But he must have looked at the disk, which wasn't there because it was monkeys.
It's a vax.
Yeah.
It's not exactly small.
I remember I ran to it.
Yeah. Actually, the other thing you're assuming is that you would not have attached storage, and if you did, it would be right there.
And it would not be monkeys.
I will comment that some people have said that it's absolutely a true story. Some people have said that it may or may not be a true story. But whether it is or not, it's a beautiful, beautiful example of dubious assumptions.
I'm reading web pages, it says it's true.
Well, you know, if you're seeing it on the web, it must be true.
My point exactly.
Well, yes. I think we should all remember that everything is true. It's whether or not it's factual.
No, actually, there are some things that are very definitely not true. Because, of course, ESR is highly reliable. Questions? Comments?
Well, if you could apply this type of thing to smaller scale things, then you could apply, say, to a single source code tree.
You can absolutely apply to a single source code tree. And actually, more interestingly, I think, in the environments we have today, is you end up with a bug that is not there when you run one piece of software by itself. Maybe not there if you run it with somebody, a second piece of software. But you hit a third, or you get the wrong kind of input, and all of a sudden you've got a problem in spades. And it's something you're not going to find if you review a single source code, tree of source code, or a single application. It's something you're only going to find in combination and running in combination. And it's a royal bitch to debug.
Great backdoor.
It's a beautiful backdoor. Of course, we all know nobody would ever put in backdoors. Well, nope, nobody's thought of it. No one would ever do that because everybody always behaves properly.
Until today, I thought no one would ever hook monkeys up to a vax.
And I suppose that falls under, and you should really expect the unexpected. And you wonder why I picked that slide.
So, Kat, are you suggesting that we should all be retrofitting our data centers and making sure everything is really tightly nailed down in case gravity stops working?
I'm installing the monkey rat.
I'm suggesting there's value in differing viewpoints so that you can check your assumptions.
I see.
Presuming a roughly spherical vax of uniform density. Okay, I think we broke him this time.
No, I am fully functional, thank you.
That's what Data said.
So not going there.
Anyone else? All right.